Welcome to 90 Minutes with Neville Southall. I'm one of your co-hosts, James Rogers. We're here with the big man himself, Neville Southall. Hiya, Nev, how are you doing, mate?
I'm all right, James, you?
I'm good, mate, I'm good. And we've got a special guest with us today. Former Everton, Rangers, PSV, Man City player, former England international, top Evertonian, Michael Ball. How are you doing, mate?
I'm very good, James. Nice to be on.
So, you know, just a few hours before we came on, we got a bit more news, didn't we? It's another Everton day in paradise, you could say. Another fun day at the office, as you said earlier. Looks like there's another charge against us now, doesn't it? So, what are your thoughts on that?
To who?
Yeah, I've been very, very busy. It's been a very busy day. There's been leaked to the media regarding Everton and Nottingham Forest are going to be having another breach. In front of the independent commission, and I'm just as a fan, I feel sorry for all the fans, because we're spending so much time and effort, and many other fans have lack of sleep and worrying about the football club of off field matters. You know, 9 times out of 10, Jordan Mike sort of I write a piece in the column in the Echo week after week, and all I'm talking about 9 times out of 10 is off field matters. Is obviously the breaches, there's VAR, and it's like the whole game, it's just on its arse right now. And I just feel sorry for the fans. That's all we're concerned about is our football club. But yes, we hold our hands up. I think the owners who have come into the football club, it has been shambolic from the start, and there's been no plan in place. But I feel sorry for the guys who are there now, who are trying to sort of, they're just spinning plates, trying to to get under these rules. And I don't think it's no surprise that we've breached something again. Reading between the lines, it looks like it's the same breach of last time. Everton's argument is like 75% of the new one is already being penalised, but the Premier League, for some reason or another, haven't got any laws within their laws that stops them getting penalised twice, even though the EFL has and other bodies. I've got that in a double jeopardy clause in. The Premier League haven't for one reason or another. And I think it's just because it shows you how far detached they are as a company, away from the fans and the real world of what's going on. I think that these laws came into back around about 2014. The game's moved on. Money's moved on. Transfer fees have upped. The players' wages have gone up. Interest rates have shot through the roof. And they haven't moved the goalpost at all to go in line with that. So it's difficult for all football clubs. But you also got to remember that everyone's in the same boat. Other teams have had a starting opportunity. My old ex-club, Man City, had 10 years of doing basically what they wanted. And now, obviously, they're that big. They can still attract the big players because they've had 10 years of sort of no barriers put in front of them. So for clubs like Everton and other clubs who want to dare to dream, I feel like these rules just stop that from happening. It's a sport's open to everyone, and it's a competition, and you have your local team and you want your local team to do well. And if you get a wealthy owner in, you'd always dream and have that expectation of the one day can we start competing with the lads at the top again and start dreaming again. And these sort of laws that they put in, it just seems to protect the top clubs. It makes it more difficult for the teams at the bottom or even in the middle of the Premier League to compete, and you've got to sell your best players year on year for low value just to be compliant with what's going on. And teams like Newcastle, obviously, they're state owned, which that baffles me how, one, that was allowed, but two, they'll have to start balancing the books, and it's sort of stopping other teams for getting involved and protecting the elite. So for Everton now again to have two charges in one season, and no one's been done in the past. It does seem, another nail in the coffin for Evertonians, and it's something that you'd hope we can get on top of and start talking about football and the ability of the players on the pitch, and we can talk about the rights and wrongs of what the manager's up to and the team back at the old school days of just enjoying football and talking about what's gone on the pitch instead of all this noise outside the pitch. And the Everton fans have been very, very vocal for years regarding how the club's been run. And they were probably laughed at from a lot of people outside of the Everton bubble, thinking, Everton, they had a good owner and everything was all rosy. But inside the club, the fans knew it wasn't run correctly. And they're always asking questions and we weren't getting the communication that we need. And now it's all coming out in the open. it's probably no surprise to majority of Evertonians of what's going on, but it does feel like the Premier League now are picking and choosing who to bully, and unfortunately for us, it's us right now.
I mean, Nev, what are your thoughts on today?
Well, I think it's strange that top business people come into football and fail. And there's very few of them that succeed, isn't it? You know, you look at Barcelona and Real Madrid, two top clubs in the world, they change presidents like confetti, only because of the money. Now, I'd like to see what the due diligence is of the Premier League regarding the owners. I would like to see all potential owners go through a course, some sort of management course of football. Also, I wouldn't let them in there without somebody who's been in the game for a long time, who knows the inside of football, because I think they get starstruck. Regarding the money, see, my issue is if when I worked non-league, right, and somebody came in who had a few quid, they paid the players and they got on. And nobody had to go at them. So if you've got money, why can't you spend it? I don't know, if you're bringing the money in, look, and at the end of the day, every business in Britain and the world, and you'll know as a financial fella, James, that if you fuck up, you fail and you go bust, right? So what's the problem with spending your money? And if you fail, then you fail and you fuck up. The problem you got with sport is that you carry the dreams of between, I don't know, 40 and 100,000 fans. And that way, there's a certain moral, I think, moral thing that you have to think about the fans. But for me, the Premier League have come out with this shit because the government are going to interfere. There's no other reason for that. Football has been, how should we say, Arthur Daly-ish. For ever since I've been in football, I've seen things that you think, well, you know, people passing medicals on the strength of a say-so, you know, money being changed hands in service stations, transfers that were not really transfers because they just need to help the other club out, different sort of owners. There's been all of that. And now all of a sudden, football wants to get its house in order. And I'm thinking, why would you do that? But there's only one reason. That's politically, they've got some things on the horizon. Obviously, the independent adjudicator, or whatever he's called, and the Super League. So, for me, it's about the... I want to see the fans at Everton, right? Have a go, write a letter to the fans for the advisory board. Write a letter to the Premier League asking to see the due diligence done on the owner. I want to see what the outcome of that was. I want to see if it's going to be the same for every other club. We're going to get the same, I suppose, judgments on us as every other club in the league. Because I'll guarantee you that probably all 92 clubs, if you look hard enough, have got something that you wouldn't want to see to an independent adjudicator. But because politics is involved, and because there's a, I suppose, a way of looking at the top clubs differently to the bottom clubs. You know, when you think about it, I mean, Bowley said it, it's coming, the financial fair play is coming for the top club. Well, in my eyes, in some ways it hasn't, because Man City got squillions more quids than Everton, but they can't spend theirs, nor Newcastle. They've got to keep to a budget. And I'm thinking, well, that doesn't happen lower down, so why doesn't it happen lower down? If you're going to do it, be consistent. Because I know whatever country you go to, if the owner's got a few quid and he pays more money, blah blah blah, then they can spend their money. It's their money. Why are the Premier League so against people spending their money? The Premier League will be sustainable, right? If a club goes bust in the Premier League, it'll do every fucker a favour, because it'll prove that the mismanagement, and people start thinking about it. At the moment, every Evertonian knows it's been a shambles since Phil Carter left, because they did it. They were the last old-fashioned type of people. Now, it's just a shambles. And I think the club's been mismanaged for so long that, you know, we look on the pitch, it's a shambles. We look off the pitch, it's a shambles. You look at the financial situation, it's a shambles. When is the Premier League's duty to step in and probably be able to come into the club and look? Why haven't they done a review before now? Because they all know when you get new owners, there should be an ongoing, I suppose, examination of what's happening, at least for the first 2 years, because owners come into football and they don't know anything about football. So maybe there's a place where the Premier League should appoint somebody within each club who's to oversee that sort of stuff. And then we have an ongoing evaluation of how they're doing. So Everton have never had any feedback from the Premier League, as far as I know. Maybe they have. But the fans have had no communication. So I think for me, Premier League have got to look at themselves and say, look, we've got this completely wrong. If we broke the rules, that's fine. But Notts Forest the same. But every other club's probably broken a rule or two. So we're going to go through all the league teams, are we? Everyone and every transfer that's ever been in the last 2 years or 3 years, and every club will be deducted. It's going to be an absolute shambles fixture-wise. It's going to be absolute shambles for all the people who sponsor the games. And it's going to be an incredible strain on all the mental health and football fans.
You know, one of the things that I don't get is, like, you could have, you know, bringing in lots of players, go crazy in the transfer market, like Everton have done. You know, I mean, we know that hasn't been an unqualified success. I mean, you don't need to be a genius to work that out. But you've got the transfer side in football, and then you've got teams who are actually trying to build infrastructure. You know, we've seen them all go out there, like Arsenal with a new stadium, Spurs with a new stadium, you know, obviously with what Man City did. Everton have gone out and building that new stadium. It's a massive, massive undertaking. It's a big part of the future of the club, obviously. It's also a big part of the future of the local area. It's creating jobs. It's a massive, massive economic undertaking. I don't see how we can be, as it seems to be, being punished for that, in terms of, like, we're trying to build infrastructure for the future. We're trying to regenerate that part of the city. We're obviously building for the club's future as well, but it's a far, far bigger thing. And it feels like, you know, I think maybe you mentioned this in your column, Michael, that, like, here we are trying to build for the future, and yet we're getting punished for it. That's something I just don't understand, particularly with regards to the stadium.
Yeah, that's the icing on the cake, is what we all want to do. We want to be competing, and with these barriers in front of you, the only way of doing that is trying to raise income from outside, and that is building a stadium. And, you know, as I said, like Daniel Levy's comments regarding Tottenham, this fantastic new stadium they had. If they had to build that stadium now, he said there's no way they'll be able to afford it with the costs, with the interest rates going up. There's no way that'll be viable. You know, and Everton have decided to build the stadium now, better late than never, but we're trying to do it the right way because we want to attract the best players to the club again. And we need a state-of-the-art stadium to do that, to generate more sponsorships and money from outside. But the issue is we've had the COVID, we had the Russian war, and we seem to be getting penalised for doing it at this certain time. And obviously timing is everything. And it just feels like we are a little bit cursed as a football club. The time we decide to build a stadium, those two big world events happen and force us funding up, and we're getting penalised that we're trying to fund the stadium ourselves. You know, if we had a loan, if we got a loan from a bank, the interest rates wouldn't be included with our loss of sustainability. But because we're trying to fund it ourselves through, obviously, the owner, that we're getting penalised for that. And surely that's got to be taken into account, which the Premier League have sort of agreed on 1 year, but then on a final year, they haven't. And our interest rates, which have obviously gone up, have been included in our losses, which is, I find, just baffling. It's like they're picking and choosing different rules. And yeah, we understand we want better facilities for the football club. That's the way modern football's going, and you want to, you know, we are playing catch up in that way. And but yeah, I agree with you there, James. That's what we're getting penalised, I feel, for building a stadium in this difficult time. And unfortunately, the ones who are suffering are the fans. You know, we don't really want to lose Goodison, to be honest. I wouldn't want to leave Goodison. I'd rather have a good football team and spend £500 million on a good team. But we know for the longevity, for the next 100 years or so, you know, this move has got to happen. And right now, we seem to be spinning plate and battling with the authorities above on sort of every matter regarding trying to make Everton a better club than what it is.
And that's the problem, you see, for me, is that since we lacked ambition to start with, we signed shite, right? Mm. So we've always got a bad team. If you had a good team, you would attract all the sponsors, you would be paying less ground, you would pay less for your facilities, you would regenerate the area because people come for success. And we've done it all out tit again. We've gone through some poor teams and not attracted the best players and sold players. And when we have got probably one, you know, Rooney, one of the best players in the world, we have to tell him. So if you look at it in a purely business sense, what would you be doing? Because I tell you what, we've got this stadium, which is okay. But let's see if we can build a team that we outgrow the stadium. What we've done is done it the other way around. We've got a stadium where it's outgrowing the team. The team is nowhere near to match the stadium. Now, if you go into a new stadium and you want to sell it commercially, then you've got to have a winning team. You've got to have people on that pitch that people want to come and see. And I think because, again, going back to the business people, what do you build first? Do you build the fucking roof or do you build the foundations? And what we're trying to do is build a roof and fuck the foundations, and we're falling down all the time. Ever since I blame the former chairman when he said 10th was good enough, it was fucking rubbish. Now, what we should have done is gone and said, right, the philosophy of this club is to try and win the league every year. If it's not, there's no point in having the fucking club. So you need to have that. And then when you've got that philosophy and you get players in and you get close to lots of stuff and you might win a few things, then you start building that team and that philosophy and that belief. But we've just been pulled about by so many poor signings, so many poor, not poor managers, because some of the managers were half decent, but they're dealing with poor players. So the recruitment's been terrible. And when you have a business, and again, this is what goes back to my thing is from the top, if your recruitment is bad, your business fails. So you can have Harrods, but if your staff are shit, you don't have Harrods for very long. And what we've done is done it the wrong way round. We could regenerate that area if we are the team in the Champions League, back in easy. Right? It's going to be a bit harder now because of where we are. You're going to have to work twice as hard to sell commercially. And now if it comes off where we're going to get penalised for doing the ground, you know, I can see that it's wrong, but also it goes back to me to a lack of ambition and a mismanagement from the owners and the chairmen and up to date, really. So for me, it's poor business, and yet all these people are supposed to be good business people. They're fucking useless.
But that, going back from what you exactly what you said there, Nev, it's like it only could happen to Everton where your owner is a successful businessman in accountancy, and we're now getting charged twice on accountancy. You think you start thinking to yourself, how do they make these guys make money? You know, obviously away from football, very, very successful. But surely you're not going to waste, you know, 75%, 80% of your wealth on football. You know, and you know, he gets involved with so many agents, and if rumours have happened as true, he wanted a say in football and matters. Well, you've got no way to get any structure in there. He's paying people at the football club, whether they were good or bad. He's paying them to do a job, to be a head of recruitment, to find the best players in and around there, to have a good scout network. But then all of a sudden, he comes along and gets a phone call and wipes out their budget by, he's had a phone call off a friend who, you know, who offers him a player that he thinks would be better than what the manager would think or the head of recruitment would think. So it's just been a mess since he's walked through the door.
So how many of them players, if you're a business, are a good asset to the football club that you can sell? Right, there's somebody tomorrow come in and snap your hand off for. Right, and I'll guarantee there's probably two, if you're lucky. Yeah. Right, and then, so again, it's bad business. You make sure your assets are good. And it comes back to this, for me, Bawley, right, is that we haven't got a philosophy. We haven't got an identity. We change with each manager our style of play and the style of players. For one, going on to what I was going to talk to you about anyway, the academy, I think, should be separate. We should have our own, everybody should decide on what the philosophy and what an Everton player should be, and we stick to that philosophy, and the academy produces that, and we get managers to match our philosophy. We can't go out and get Sam Allardyce 1 week and Coleman the next, then Martinez, and they all want to change it a slightly different way. You can have such a mismatch, and that's what we've got. At the moment now, right, we're chuffed to fuck because everybody's trying. And I'm thinking, what happens in your job? If you don't fucking try, you get the sack. So why are we so happy that they're trying? That's their fucking job. So for me, it's really poor management from the owner, that if people aren't doing their jobs, they've got to get rid of them. But I'll say one thing, Paulie, right? If you have the money, what would you be like in there? You'd like to think you'd be miles different, but because you want a success so bad, you know, when you look at the fans, if the fans had that money, would they be as cautious as what we want to be from the outside now? Or would they go, fuck, it's Everton, I need success. I want to make success. So, you know, all this person's told me he's a good person. So that's what I'm saying. If you come into a football club, you need somebody alongside you who's been in the game a long time to say, whoa, hang on a minute. Do you know where I go to? You look at Mark Bright at Crystal Palace. Been there a while. Mick Hartford's been at Luton for a while. You know, they've been in the game and they know what's what. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you manage your club. Now, how come Crystal Palace always produce really good players and they've got a smaller budget than us, a smaller ground, a fucking harder place to find players because it's London? So how can they produce them players all the time and we can't? What are we doing wrong?
No, 100% agree. That's exactly what's happened. Our identity as a football club is totally gone, and to grow as a team or grow as a club, you've got to have an identity. It's very easy if you just look at the most successful teams around. Their identity doesn't change. The coach might change every other week, you know, but, you know, that's fine. The coach is there to coach the players, you know, but they have an identity. You know, they have enough, you know, you go and pick, and, you know, it's easy for obviously Real Madrid and Barcelona to go and pick players they want, but it's easier to pick the one or two to keep your momentum going. We've gone, as Nev said, from a defensive manager to attacker manager to Carlo Ancelotti, and you've gone, what style are we? You know, one summer, one transfer, we bought three number 10s when we had no left-sided player. What do you expect to happen when the clubs run like that?
How can Yerimina be a player and Bernard be a player for Everton?
Yeah. No, exactly, yeah.
Big difference.
Exactly. Well, that's what the owners obviously come in, and he thinks he's put somebody in charge who knows football but doesn't know Everton, doesn't know the Everton style, doesn't know what the Everton fans want. And so I find that sort of lazy sort of scouting, like ex-Barcelona players, a Brazil player. Yeah, fine, he might be good in a certain league or certain, you know, but not for Everton Football Club. You know, it doesn't tick the boxes. You might be able to have one maverick in your team. But someone who can do a little bit special, that's fine. But Everton's been built a success in Nev's era. Everyone was working hard. They were all good footballers, but they worked for each other. But they knew what the badge meant, and they left everything on the field.
Well, they had the one thing that these haven't got, which they get the basics right. And from the basics, they can build. And you know, Bawley, what people want when you walk out on that pitch is, first and foremost, you give absolutely everything you got. Even if you're shit, they'll go with you.
Yeah.
Right, because you're giving everything. And then if you're half decent and you give everything, they'll absolutely fucking love you. If you're fucking really good and you try your bollocks off, they'll fucking idolise you. Now, that's a really simple message. And I don't understand why people can't understand that. You give everything every week. You know, and I still look at the same things. You've got the fitness people who tell people they can't fucking play four games. You've got the psychologists who tell you that the players are not motivated. And I'm thinking, we need to strip this back here and go, I tell you what is football about? Football's about 11 people on that pitch, giving everything they got, and then you try and find a formation, or you find a philosophy that you want to go to. And at the moment, we're the cross between, I think, fucking Bolton Wanderers and fucking Wimbledon. Because, you know, I look at Jordan Pickford taking free kicks in the halfway line, and I'm thinking, if I come out to the halfway line to take a free kick, Howard Kendall would have gone berserk.
Yeah. I'd be embarrassed if I was a defender. I'd be embarrassed going, why is my goalkeeper taking free kicks? As a outfield player, it's not sort of being the way I got coached. Is your last option is your goalkeeper. You're there for an option, yes, but it's like we feed Jordan, and then, as you say, the Wimbledon style, and you're thinking, well, that's I'll be embarrassed. I want more like experience of myself and more belief in my own ability to be able to do the job better than my goalkeeper.
Unfortunately, at the moment, I know what he's trying to do as a manager. I can see that. And I'm thinking, like, okay, you've got to live with it. But you look at all the games and there's one thing that misses, and that's that little bit of quality in there. There's a little bit of quality missing all over the pitch. I look at us at the moment, I'm thinking he's turned into Richarlison, because every time there's a transfer window, you'd always hear a rumour about him going off and him wanting to play for the club. He gets injured a lot and he's on the floor a lot, and I'm thinking, yeah, he reminds me of Richarlison. At some stage, you've got to replace Seamus because he's fantastic, but you've got to keep him at the club because he's the only one that knows what it means. But the left okay, but when you looked at the game against Aston Villa, and then people just pass around us, and everyone on the ball, and we don't seem to be comfortable on the ball for some reason. We don't seem to have the time that everybody else has, and I'm thinking, well, do we always get caught between two stools? Do we do miss somebody who can do something for us when the shit hits the fan. But at the moment, all they got to try and do is grind out results. And just, it is a grind. And, Sean Dyche is a man to grind out results. But if you can ask somebody to win the championship with better players than that, I find it difficult to believe that even with the new ground, somebody's going to walk down the road and go, I'd love to join that club because they've got a new ground. The new ground ain't going to be worth shit if you're shit in the league.
But I don't think players. Yeah, I know if you sign up for a football club, that is sort of like the new modern thing. Now, come and look at the changing rooms, come and look at the new training facilities, come and look at the stadium. I don't think many players are that bothered. They want to know the ambition of what you're trying to achieve. Are you going to try to win something? What's your objectives? What are we trying to do? Am I going to be a key player? Great. Of course, it's nice home comforts to have a good stadium and good training ground, but it doesn't make you a better player. That's just a mindset of maybe the modern players might be slightly different, but, last thing you look at, if you're speaking to the agents or you're moving football clubs, you don't say, oh, I'm not moving to you because you've got a shit ground. That's just a little bit of a bonus.
Never did Brazil any harm.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's another topic of in this country.
Walk in Brazil or some of them countries, the stadiums and the pitches are shit. You don't hear them complaining all the time. Then you come to Europe and you get into the European way and they have a moan if everything's not perfect. But in the main, you look at, some of the African players. Why the African players make such an impact on the Egyptians? Because some of the stadiums are shit. And they go, I'll tell you what, we just got to get on with it. So they're more adaptable than some of our players who go, hang on a minute, there's a fucking blade of grass over there. I can't go over that. So I think there's a lot of the African countries and Brazil where they'll put up with shit to play the game. Over here, we won't put up with shit to play the game. We need to get back to reality here, because who's going to sign for Everton Football Club at the moment when you go, I'll tell you what, tell me your ambition to stay in the league. Okay, you got a new ground, great. What am I going to do with a new ground? Sell fucking hot dogs. So for me, what vision are you selling at Everton Football Club at the moment? It's easy if you're Pep Guardiola, isn't it? It's probably easy if you're Klopp or somebody like that. When you come to what sort of vision are we selling them?
And that's the issue. I think David Moyes was, when he was at the football club, he was looking at the championship, because you know that, you're coming to Everton Football Club, huge in history, fantastic club, you're going to be a part of this. But unfortunately now, these championship players, they're not £4-5 million anymore. They're 20-25 million pounds now. So even that's a gamble to try. That was the way in to get the sort of next level. So you're not competing with the top boys to bring quality in. and you're just messing around in that mediocre part of football where there's so many footballers all roughly the same. It's difficult for recruitment, it's difficult for the scouts, because obviously every scout's dead simple. Everyone's watching the same players. The ones who have scored on 30, 40 goals a season, everybody wants them, and that's your number one target. But then by the time realistic comes to hand of what money you can offer them and what ambition you can offer them, you're down to the 50 to the 100 mark on the player that you can actually bring in realistically.
So why would you have an under-23 squad? Why would you have an under-23? Because by 23, if they're not in the first team, they've got to go. So, and if you've got a team where they're all 20 and they're not got any chance of the team, your recruitment's wrong even in the academy. So the academy for me is your golden nugget, because you've got to keep producing them. And you have to keep producing them because you have to survive. You can't always buy. So you need to get your academy right, I think. And it is difficult, but, you know, the times
it is difficult. If you look at like the Chelsea model, you know, I know Chelsea, it's slightly different because obviously Bramford's come in and outspent everybody and started, you know, buying players from all around the world. And their academy sort of suffered a little bit. But then they started getting sort of a nest egg of all the best players. I think Chelsea sort of used their model separately. You know, their academy, they just churn out players and they put them out on loan. They do, and then they sell them. They put them into League Cup games. They get a bit of experience. Then they sell them, if they're not to the level of the standard. But I think Chelsea were touch lucky with under Lampard, where they had the 2-year ban, where they couldn't bring anyone. So they went into the academy and gave so many players an opportunity, like Mason Mount and quite a few others, a chance to play in the first team because they had no other option. And next minute, they've got 50, 60, 70 appearances in the Premier League. And then as soon as they had a chance to buy money, they could sell them at top whack and carry on again. So, that's the way you want to go. I know that's touch luck at Chelsea, but the under-21s and the academy system, I don't feel it's fit for purpose for the players. They're not developing. You know, as soon as you get 16, 17, that's an opportunity for you to understand how the game works. And then over 18, you've got to be around the first team. You've got to be in and around there to see where you're up to see what the challenges ahead. Because how are you not going to know, you know, what you're up against if you're not in and around them each and every day? You know, what the standard actually is. You know, you're getting mollycoddled and wrapped in cotton wool till you're 21, 22, and then you get an opportunity to play like a League Cup game and you haven't had that man's experience. It's going to be a shock. You know, they should have that opportunity. The club should work better, the Premier League, to help the lower clubs down, to go certain age groups, like you're going there for the year. You know, play the man's game, learn to adapt them. And obviously, you can't just... The problem with Everton got in every Premier League, there's so many players. My day is slightly different, where there was probably only 6 or 7 each year coming through, and then you may go out on loan. Now there's full squad of 18s, 19s, or the 21s. So there's 25 players, 75 kids. So that's the issue. And if the models was brought in to help the development, but I think it hinders them really badly, and they just seem to be stagnated and get a shock of the lies when they get opportunities to play the man's game.
But they should be all ruthless. That's what I'm saying. Management is ruthless. So if they're not around, fuck them off. I mean, do you know what I mean? And the ones you think you've got a chance, you should be able to pay a club lower down. And then say, right, take 4 of ours. And I still go back to the same thing, Bowley. If you've got somebody within your club or your coaches, and you think, they're good coaches, well, then we should be fucking the coaches off, out for on loan, to get some experience around Europe. And if we think there's a potential manager there, we should be buying into a club abroad and putting them in there, taking some of them players off. Well, you played in Holland, didn't you? You know, it's a different game. It's a different way of doing stuff. You know, it's a much more rounded education, I think, at times. But you need to motivate the coaches in the academy. You need to identify your people early on. You need to identify which ones you need to go out. You need to know that the coaches are motivated as well. And I think sometimes people go in there, they got a job with Everton, and all they do is they protect the fuck out of their job. And they don't end up doing the job sometimes. They end up keeping the job by just making sure that they're comfortable in their job. And I think it needs a massive shake-up where you go, it's got to be ruthless. You've got to go into business. You've got to be ruthless. if you, unfortunately, if you're not good enough, here's a ladder. If you're not good enough for these, you go to them, you go to them, you go to them, and you find your level. But, you know, we've got to cut them shorter earlier. The under 23s is just a complete and utter waste of time because it's just a stroll up. There's nothing on, because there's no point. So, there's, you know, to win the under 23 league, fucking great. What does that prove? You should be in the under 23s in the fucking first place. You should be out doing something else. So, for me, I just think it, but it needs to be independent from the first team. And the manager coach shouldn't have anything to do with that for me. It should be done. And you should be going to PSV and Ajax and Juventus and all of them, your coaches, to learn and then bring them back and feed that into the club. So
So that model you're stating, that's actually happening, obviously, with the City Group and obviously Red Bull. You know, there's coaches like, I know Jesse Marsh got his opportunity. He left the Red Bull and he went to Leeds and obviously didn't do too well. But that's how, that's their group. Red Bulls, there's a few teams around the world that they get an opportunity, the lowest one. They go to the big, you know, and they step up and then they step up again and get given the opportunity as assistant manager. Then they go back down and manage the lower team, see what he's all about. If he ticks all the boxes, you get his opportunity to manage the bigger team in the group. And there's a pathway to the identity of the group of either business, but also everyone knows the roles. Everyone knows if you do well in your job, you've got a chance to get promotion. And everyone's in the same boat and you can sell players onto each other. Opportunities to go, well, you're not good enough for us right now, but you can go back to that other team, get yourself some experience and play the man's game and see where you're at. And it seems a very simple way of doing it, but for one reason or another, maybe because the Premier League is the pinnacle everyone wants to be in, that they just panic and they want success yesterday. But someone needs to step back and draw it right back and start from basics all over again, I feel.
I look at Duncan, right? Duncan is a prime example. If Duncan would have been allowed out to manage lower down for a year or two, he would have been a totally different manager than what he was at Everton. And he would have been a totally different manager than he was at Forest Green. So, because he would have known the levels. And then it's really difficult because he could have been an Everton manager. He might still in the future, but you could have had a look at him in a different situation where he's managing somewhere. And then you go, actually, can we see what he's like? Okay, we'll put a few quid in that club. And then you do, you know, you could have done the same with Dave Unsworth, put him somewhere. You know, the fact that we didn't is a shame, really, because they could have done better than what they've done. You know, Duncan's doing okay at the moment. But he's had one failure, really, where he walked into a situation where everybody was on loan apart from a couple, I think. So it was difficult. And you've got to understand that when you come from Everton, you're not working with fantastic players. So you've got to take that patience into there and go, right, they're here for a reason. You know, they're on the way up, they're on the way down, or they found their level. So you've got to have the patience. And I think, you know, somebody like Steven Gerrard, I think found it hard at Aston Villa, and Frank Lampard to a certain extent finds some of the players where he thinks they can do things that they can't do. And then he gets frustrated when they can't do it, so just doesn't bother with them. And I think that's really hard.
Yeah. Michael, I've got a question. When the so you come through with us, you come through the academy, you go through the system, you're in the first team in the late 90s, and then obviously you move away from Everton, you're playing in, you go Rangers, you're at PSV, you come back to City, when was it, around 2007?
Yeah, 6-7, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously by that time, I would imagine that the sort of the changes in football were starting to become apparent, and Man City was at the forefront of that. I mean, how did that experience, and in terms of, like, I imagine that Everton had a lot more of, like, the older football about it, the older system, the older way of running a club, to then suddenly be back in English football at City, which was, you know, making the first steps towards becoming this kind of global powerhouse, this sort of new model for football. Like, did you see any of the start of that at Man City?
Yeah, it was a shit show, really, when I first walked through the door. You know, going to Rangers and PSV, that's never said before. They're just winners. You know, the fans, you've got to win. You know, if you're not winning 1-0 by 20 minutes, the fans let you know. You know, the demands on to win silverware from every club, from both clubs, is huge. I'll talk about my second year, but we won the league the first year, PSV, and everyone was like, it's a given. And I'm, you know, won the league at Rangers, but on the last day, which was a bonus. But at PSV, there was like still 6-7 games to go, and we're only top of the league by a couple of points. And you know, your teammates are going, "Oh, we've won this league." And I'm thinking, you know, things could turn. You know, things could get worse. We could lose players, blah blah blah. But their mindset of we're going to win, and we did. But the second year, Koeman was the manager who wasn't liked by the fans, and we were 10-12 points clear Christmas, and then it all fell away. The last game of the season, we were third, and PSV Eindhoven, the area, the square there where you go and celebrate in the town hall, they still put the boards up and all the trophies ready for the fans' welfare and welcome to win the league again. And I'm thinking, we're third. We need two teams to lose. We need to win by like four goals. And it happened. You know, Filikoku scored. We won 5-1. Won the league. And you go back to Ireland. But that was just a club with a mentality of, we're going to win. And I found it like a bit strange. But then also, it's the right way to be thinking. You know, when I was there in Holland when the Dutch team got to the semi-finals of the World Cup, and they all come back, there was no fanfare. There was no fanfare welcome for them. They were all pissed off. They weren't happy with them. They wanted to win the World Cup. You know, we've had things in the past where, say, Gascoigne coming back with a pair of fake tits, and you know he's lauded as a fantastic person, and which he is. But that was sort of the English mentality. I've heard stories about Michael Ballack at Germany where, you know, he missed Champions League for the second yellow card and the World Cup. And he just said, "Well, that's my job." You know, he did his job for the team, and Germany was successful, and Holland successful. And I think we lost that mentality, especially at Everton, of the winner mentality under Neves years, that we expected to win things or be there or thereabouts. And the mediocre, what Neves speaking about, that's been going on far too long at Everton Football Club. So when I went into City, that shocked me, because Manchester City were struggling. We put, you know, where the guy who had JD was the owner. He wanted to get rid. We were struggling to pay, I think, wages and even pay the milkman. And in my 3 years at Man City, you know, I had three different managers, three different owners. And yeah, you could see the idea. We had the Thai president coming to the football club who was nuts. He was off his head. You know, you walk around the training ground, there was just Thai people everywhere, from his wife to the masseurs. There was just all kinds of shenanigans going on. It wasn't a football club. The players were say what they wanted to say. Our manager Sven was fantastic, but at the end of the day, Sven had nothing to say. He couldn't overrule the owner. The owner used to walk in at half time and full time and wanted his say, and everyone would be looking at each other going, "What's going on here?" And apparently he had his money all tied up with the government. It was all corruption back home, and he had to sell. But his dream was to do what actually City were doing. They started doing camps in America, taking over from the Salvation Army, building all the Man City camps, that he wanted to build this dream. And then when the current owners come in, that started being real. There was talks about Kaká coming to the football club, and you're thinking, is this a pipe dream? Is this another pipe dream from the owners? But you know, Tevez started walking in, you know, and then you start thinking, now, these guys mean business. Rubinho walked in the football club. And then, as a player, couldn't play there. You know, you're thinking, well, I'm probably going to be forced out here. They're going to be trying to, you know, obviously bring in stars for every position. But it was good to be around, because that winning mentality come back. Training was better. There's no one going through the motions thinking, it doesn't matter if I train crap today, I'm playing Saturday because the rest are crap. You know, that was the mentality at the start. It was just like, well, I played okay Saturday, so I'll be playing. But when these new faces come in, training standards come up, competition feet, you know, rises a lot, and that ups your game, and it ups everybody's game, and it makes you better. And we done fantastic in like final season, where we were up thereabouts in the first year under Sven. Sven got sacked, I think, just because of the Thai owner didn't really know what he was doing. And we got Europe on the last day after the hiding from Middlesbrough. But we still managed to get to make Europe from that result. But the season was a sort of success, and Sven trained every day. We did have days off, and we started spiralling after Christmas, where the better players, the Brazilian players, the foreign players who have never played in English football before. They've never endured playing over Christmas and playing over New Year. They've always had a winter break and probably been on, you know, Rio Beach enjoying themselves partying. Those players were flying to Brazil, playing for Brazil, flying back playing Thursday, flying back on a Friday. We expect them to be 10 on 10 on a Saturday. And yet they were still good, but we just lost that edge. And we started, you know, after mid-January, our performances were dipping. And it was their performances, and we weren't good enough really to carry them over to sort of stay in the top four, top five, which we were hoping for. But we still made yours, still a success. And then the third year, Mark Hughes come in and again, training changed again. Tempo was higher in training. We had the days off so we could give you double sessions and it was enjoyable. But what it was about was a target of what Sven said and what the owner said is, yes, we're going to bring more players in, but while you're under contract, show me what you're all about. And that's all you want as a player. You know, have a fair crack of the whip, get a couple of games under your belt, show them what you're all about. And if you've got it, you've got the heart, you've got the ability, great, they're going to keep you. If they don't, they're going to find someone else. And everyone knew where they stood. And you could take that knock on the door if the manager goes, look, we're going to bring someone else in who's much better than you, blah, blah, blah. They'll help you try and find a club. You take that as a player. You understand that. And the ambition was there at the start. But when he first walked in, you know, just question marks because of the disastrous tie owner. You think it was just another pipe dream. But as we see right now, you know, the proper business people, proper football and people who wanted to generate, you know, a poor area of Manchester, but not just in Manchester, but worldwide to make it the group the way it is right now.
Do you honestly think, though, that everybody in football now is a snob because they all want to play like Man City, but they can't? Do you know?
Remember Sam Allardyce when I think Sam got one better than Pep in one game where he doesn't like it. He couldn't find a way of stopping Sam Allardyce's style of play. They didn't like it. You know, it's not FIFA. It's not a computer game where everyone's played ticky-tacky football. You know, and football's gone that way where everyone expects a certain player to do the same thing in every team. You know, people have got different abilities. People have got different attributes that are better. Remember, like the long throw-ins, and you know, caused havoc and problems. But that seems to have gone up the game. They'd rather do short throw-ins than do five or six passes, and then don't get anywhere. I'd rather have someone who's got the ability to put a long throw-in in, ask the question to centre half. Centre half seems to be getting smaller and smaller. You know, the number nines, or besides probably Haaland, there's no number nines about anymore. You know, back in sort of my day, there was loud. There was, you know, obviously Shearer and Ferdinand. You know. There were so many that it was difficult to mark against. Yeah, defenders hate a hustle and a bustle. You know, so when the ball's in front of you as a defender, you love that. If you've got a good brain as a defender, you can read that all day and it's easier. But the rough and tumble of getting the ball turned behind, you've got to turn around and sprint, you're fighting, you're nudging. And if that's relentless, you know, one slip up, one lack of concentration, you know, they're in. You know, nowadays it just seems a bit easier to defend because everything's in front of you. Everything's controlled. The tempo in Premier League football is a lot slower now than it was back in my day. It was all kick and rush. Yes, when City play, you look at it and go, wow, it's amazing. But can't be blinded. Those players are being picked like that. I remember as a youngster playing, you know, we were a great English side as under-18s. We were really good, physical, had ability. Then we come across Spain, who were half the size as us, but passes off the park. We got battered 2-0. We couldn't get anywhere near them. But that's their model. You know, that's the way they've been brought up and we couldn't match them. So it's every manager should have an identity and it shouldn't be all the same. It gets boring to watch. You know, when you see some games on the TV, you just watch it. You just want to switch off. It's boring.
So why do all the pundits insist that there's only one way to play football? They all do.
Not the way. Yeah, God knows.
But it's true. You look at it and you go, if I was playing against Man City, I wouldn't play like Man City. I'd find a way of being really horrible and really in your face and make it the worst game that they've ever played in. And then because we're not as good as them, you've got to accept that you're not as good as them, but you can make sure that it's horrible for them. But that's frowned upon now because you've got to play this this way of everybody's like, oh, it's jolly cricket, where we play the same way as Man City and all them top teams and get turned over, but they're better than us. Yeah, because you play like them. Why are you playing like them?
They're going to outdo you.
Yeah, who gives a fuck? Just play a different way and get a result. You know, I watched, you know, when we play the top sides, you know, we sit a little bit back and I'm thinking, well, are you waiting for the inevitable? Or you generally think you can get a clean sheet? And I think, I can't remember anywhere, Bawley, I don't know about you, I can't remember anywhere where the manager said a draw will be good enough today. They always went out and said, let's try this. And at half time, it was all about winning. It wasn't about losing, unless maybe you were down to 10 men. But then they'd say about, oh, you'll get one chance as well. Stick it in there.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And you've got to look at, surely the managers now or the coaching staff, you've got to look at the opposition and go, what's the weakness? What don't they like to happen? You know, and if you look at Aston Villa the other day against Everton, you know, they were high line. We went long twice. Dominic had his opportunity. Decore scored a goal, which was offside. But we only tried it twice.
Yeah, but and every time we went long, though, it was, apart from them two, it was straight.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy, I mean, I keep looking at it. Every time he kicks it, it either goes straight through to the other goalie. I'm thinking, well, you know, you want to boom it, so boom it on a diagonal. So you've got
to play the percentages, haven't you? Thinking if Dominic doesn't win it, the defender wins it. You've got to throw it in the final third. You haven't give possession, soft possession, over to the opposition by just a 60-yard kick, which is straight down the line.
But if you kick it that hard, you have to be, you know, Usain Bolt to get on the end of it. We ain't got a Usain Bolt. So if he's kicking it like 60, 70 mile an hour, and he gets a flick on. You've either got to be right alongside him, and we haven't got anybody that quick, have we, that can get on to the end of that. So he's got to, for me, sometimes the service into him is not great because he can't get hold of it. He can flick it on, but then he goes nowhere. So for me, to look at the service of that, we've got to look at how quick we move the ball. We've got to get right.
We've got no composure, have we, on the ball? When we win it, there's no composure. Someone just put the foot on the ball in the centre of the pitch and just keep it for 4 or 5 passes at least, just so we can reset and then go, right, we're going to try and go down the left. Now let's set up that way and do it. We just seem to be too erratic and soft possession. As soon as we get the ball, we want to get rid of it. We don't want to make a mistake, and it's no one's taking accountability of go, hang on, we need a bit of calm and assurance here at the right times. We just panic, and to win games, it's for these group of players, you know, yes, Sean Dyche's probably getting the best out of them and he's got to play a certain style with them. I understand. But it's physically and mentally draining. And to play like that from start to finish, you know, a few injuries here, there's suspensions. You know, if you look at the Wolves game away, you know, it shows you what happens if they're not, 7 or 8 players are not at it. We're getting battered, you know.
Unfortunately, if they're not 100% every game, they struggle. And if they're not going to be 100% every game. And then you look at the squad and you're going, all right, okay, so maybe he's got to try and keep that team together as long as he can, because the options on the bench aren't great. Then somebody will have a little spell like Jamama, or whatever his name is, and you're looking at him on the wing and you're thinking, oh, maybe he's got a little bit. And then he runs up his own arse, and then you're going, right, okay, maybe he hasn't. Then you look at Beppo up front and you're thinking, right, he must be chewing nails because the service up to him is horrendous.
Yeah.
So, man, no wonder they don't have any composure for their goal, because they'll get one chance every fucking 3 games. And it's hard. You can live off set pieces, right? And Sheffield United have done, but they worked on the basis of 45 set pieces to a goal. Now, if you take that now, are we putting the pressure on? And that was, I suppose they took counted long throws in that. So if we go on that percentage, you've got to get an awful lot of set pieces to score that goal. And are we capable of getting that many set pieces?
Well, I feel that's probably what we've been half good at. The start of the season, not just so good. When we got results, it's because of taking advantage of the set pieces. We've got a tall side and it's all about delivery. When we played Aston Villa, we got these, obviously Jordan Pickford, the halfway line ones, and then you've got the deep free kicks that we won a lot of. But the delivery was just poor, and so then it's a hiding for nothing. It's like they haven't tried at Finch Farm to go, when we're doing this style, it's worked. But you need another cog in your armour, because the opposition aren't daft. They're not going to let you dictate and do what you want to do every time. You've got to have a different scenario. But it's all about the delivery. And I think Jack Harrison, I think, had two or three opportunities and hit the first man twice, and then the keeper caught the third one. You're just thinking, well, all that effort to get to them opportunities, whereas to make a difference, and we just threw it away too softly.
You know, do you remember when Wimbledon first came on the scene and Sheffield United, when it was all long stuff and the goalie couldn't kick it far enough and it was really rough and tumble? What happened in the end was that teams came and they played with four centre-backs. And they went, OK, we understand what you're going to do now, and what we'll do is we'll win, we'll compete in that aerial battle so you won't get on top of us, and we're a better team than you and we'll play around you. So physically, if they can't win the battles like that, because teams will come with maybe an extra centre-half eventually against Everton if they do well, and it'll nullify what they're doing. And then, they, like you say, the plan B is what?
Yeah. No, exactly.
But do you think, Ollie, looking at the way you played, the fullbacks now, there's a difference in the way they played?
Yeah, it frustrates. Yeah, in a way, Nev, it's gone a bit full circle. Just as I was breaking in, the wing backs started coming in. I played wing back for England and youth level, which is a different animal. You know, it's a different sort of system. And internationally, a lot of teams played with a back three, which I used to suit playing as in a back three. Wing back was always a tough role, up and down. And it was sort of new coming into the Premier League. And while I enjoyed that part of it, what frustrated me, I felt you're out of position a lot. And you look at Match of the Day and you see your winger free, putting crosses in. And you're like, well, my first and foremost, I'm a defender. So the basics, no matter how style or what style you want to play. If you look at Milenko, say at Everton, you know, when he first come in, yes, he's had excuses, a new club and new surroundings, what's going on back home, I get all that. But he didn't know what to do. He felt like he needed to go forward because that's what he sees other teams do, but he's getting caught out. Crosses were coming in far too easily. And you're thinking, right, go back to basics, just stop and think that you're a left back now. So you win your battle against your opponents and stop crosses. And not just trying to block crosses, be tighter so he doesn't receive the ball. You know, my day was more of, if you look at the stats, I used to like the stats when I made no slide tackles, when I made no blocks, because that means I defended properly. I stopped my opposition from receiving the ball. I took them out of the game. But then the stats will, on the other, when I have the poor game, would look good that I've stopped three crosses, I've done a slide tackle here, slide tackle. But that's me being caught out of position. But at the end of the day, it's me trying to stop my winger. So that's your basic as a fullback. And if, like the Ashley Coles, because he was good at doing that, people tried to copy, but no one was good as Ashley Coles, bombing forward. But he had a solid back three behind him to venture forward. So it's all about your personnel that you've got in your team. And Milenko, I feel this, he's grew as a person. He's come back a lot stronger, a lot fitter. And he's winning these battles. And he's winning these battles against top opposition. You know, against Mo Salah, I think he held his own against him. And that's your job. And when I was in Holland, Nev, like I felt I had an ability to find a long pass, and I used to try and use it as much as I could. When it was on in Holland, it was always frowned upon. And I remember in the cup final, we'd done a bit of a 1-2, and the striker made the run. So I put him in over the top. He lobbed the goal, hit the bar, and it fizzled out. And the manager, like Gus Hiddink, is obviously top manager worldwide, and he thanked me for the pass. And he said, don't do that again. And I go, why? And he's going, well, you're a fullback for a reason. Trust your teammate. Because you surprised us as a team, because we're expecting a 10, 15-yard pass. But he's on more money than you, because that's his job. Philip Cocu's job is to feed the strikers. So trust your teammates. Trust them to have the ability to find it. You know, yes, in certain scenarios, if it's not on, yeah. But you know, just try and look for the players in midfield first, because they're the ones who've got the ability to find the strikers with a better pass that they can create opportunities for the striker. If the striker doesn't score, he comes off. The midfielder doesn't find the pass, he's coming off. If you don't stop your winger, you're coming off. So it was very simple. I know it's difficult, the level was different at Holland, I understand that, but you're against youngsters trying to make a career in the game from South Africa, you know, from Argentina, from Brazil, one producer. They're all trying to impress. They're all tricky wingers. It was while we were a good side, it was difficult for myself as a fullback to sort of not to adapt, but it felt like I was adapting back to old school defending of like, I'm a left back, win my battle, trust my teammates to go on and win the game for us. And you enjoyed that. I learned a lot in Holland. It was opposite to the way England was. If you talk about corners for us at PSV, I was like the one at the halfway line, you know, trying to, Ryan Babel, who was strong and fast. So I'm trying to call back one of the smaller players to stand in front of him, like you do in English football, 2v1, you know, in case of a counter-attack. I'm screaming, no one's listening to me. I pull the manager to explain, and he said, why? And I've gone, because that's what, you know, being brought up on, just in case. It was always what ifs in England.
Yeah.
And he said, if the goalie catches the ball and kicks the ball 60, 70 yards, and Ryan Babel controls it, turns, takes you on, scores past the goalie, you're not playing again. And I was like, love it. Because then he trusted my ability of, I should either read the pass, I should be tighter. And he also counts the goalie as a player. So yeah, you have the extra man in the box for the set pieces to take advantage. And I'd love that mindset. But then trying to bring that back down to England, it was all, no, can't do that. You can't do that. But it's sort of, you're copping out then, aren't you? You're passing the buck to somebody else.
If that's the case, Bowley, then right. So why is fucking Jordan Pickford smashing it, Miles? Because he wouldn't do that in Holland, would they?
No, not a chance, no. No. The Dutch goalies were good on the floor, but you know, they're only passing it round to obviously the back four. They might clip it into like a left wing back over like a winger's head, but that's basically it. And it's a bit easier in Holland because you know what you're coming up against. Everyone played 4-3-3. They're so adamant that's total football. Everyone plays that way. And like as a centre-half, when I used to play centre-half, when their goalie had the ball, as a centre-half, I'd go into midfield. Then my midfield, they would go and mark the centre-half. Yeah. So they had no one to roll it out to, but they'll still try and find a way. And it was refreshing, good learning curve for me to understand that. But it's that belief of they trust in their philosophy, but there was no surprise.
No, but there's
elements of the game.
Do your own job first.
Correct, yes. So yeah, our team was full of foreigners. You know, there was four or five Dutch players. Yeah. There was American, Australian, myself, maybe another American, and then the rest were South American. They couldn't speak English, couldn't speak Dutch. I couldn't really speak Dutch. All the team talk was in Dutch. Everything was in Dutch. And you just got on the training field, worked on what you had to work on. And then, and there were cliques, but it worked. You know, and in England, cliques were frowned upon. Of the foreigners sitting together, and then Holland go, why would you want to sit next to someone you can't understand? What's the point of that? Sit around someone you can have a debate with and talk with and get to know and have your dinner. You know, why would I want to sit on a table full of 6-7 South Americans and I can't understand the word they're saying? You feel a bit, you know, an outcast. So it was like, relax, chill out, but don't be worked hard. Training in Holland was opposite. You work two and a half hours every day. It was open to the fans. Fans could come in every day. They'd have a coffee. They'd sit. It's obviously the welfare in Holland must be high because it's always the same faces every day. But it was great atmosphere, family atmosphere, but you had to put a bit of a display on for the fans a little bit. You'd done everything. You'd done a good 2 hour ethic. In England, because of the level of the games at the weekend, your trainings were short. They were more about recovery, ice baths or whatever it is. And, you know, half the team would be out the door by 1 o'clock. You know, but in Holland, you had to be together. You had to eat together, you know, and try to make a bit of community as much as you could. And it was a good way obviously, it works. It works for Holland. It works for PSV. And I think it's the Ajax model. I think Ronald Koeman tried to do it in England, at Everton. And it's a difficult one to embrace if you're not used to that style.
So in Holland, they wouldn't sign a goalie just for his kicking ability, would they?
No, not at all, no.
But we here, he's good with his feet. And you're thinking, fuck off, good with his feet. That's not his job.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It does. Well, people are saying, oh, well, you know, you've got to be good with your feet. It's a modern game. I'm thinking, no, you don't, because they give you time and space to fucking ping the ball around. they don't go right in your face, do they? So they give you time. So well, you've got to be sort of half comfortable, but you're not put under tons of pressure with your kicking anymore, are you? Because people
back in your day, people go hide them. You didn't want it off your goalkeeper back then. You know, especially with the pitches, it was like, oh no, you don't want that. Especially at Goodison Park, we've seen it under so many managers when you've had, you know, like Michael Keane and struggling to play that style on his 6-yard box. It's the fans, you can feel the fans, the nervousness, and that must translate to the players in the pitch, and they don't want to do it, but they're getting told to do it. And they're going, I don't want to do anything I'm not good at. You know, why put me under this pressure? Confidence dips, you know, and moans and groans from the stadium. It happens. So it's like, just do what you're good at. You know, that's why you're being brought to the football club. You obviously showed something that you're good at. So try and stick to those models.
Well, it's a simple thing, isn't it? You don't get a fucking plumber to do your fucking brickwork.
100%.
So for me, I think we look too deeply at stuff, and we try and tamper with things that you don't need to tamper with. If I've got a fullback, I want him to just do that. And if he goes forward and can do something else, great, but that's a bonus. I want him to do his job first. And if everybody does their job first, then you got half a chance of conceding, haven't you? If you do a bit of this and a bit of that, you can't.
Exactly. I think we've seen that at Everton. I think, oh God, we had a guy on loan, Sidibe, a right back. And he was just wants to bomb forward. And if I'm a right winger in front of him, I'd be going, stay away from me, because I've got a 1v1 situation. I want to trust my ability to get half a yard, to beat the man, to get to the byline, to put a cross in. If you're there in my vicinity, you're taking my space, either left or right. You're just involved. Yeah, of course, if it's 2v1 or 2v2, there's an opportunity to back him up. And if you look at, say, Trent Arnold when he plays for Liverpool, he very rarely goes round Salah. He's there as a backup. You know, if Salah doesn't get past him, he'll turn around, pass it to Trent Arnold, and he's got obviously a fantastic whip of ball. That's what I think a fullback should be doing. It's just, you're there as an option if you're struggling. You know, if you're the winger struggling to beat the man, I'm there for an option for you. But you see now, like Sidibe, I remember when he was at Everton, he was just bombing forward time and time again. He's spending so much energy going forward with nothing in return. And then he's got to spin 60, 70 yards back. And then tiredness kicks in, and then he can't defend properly because he's tired. So it baffles me when you see players do stuff like that. But all over the pitch, you want your players to do your basic. It's 11v11. It's just 11 humans against 11 humans. They might have an off day. You might be against the best player in the world, but you've got an opportunity to make it difficult for them. You should thrive off that and go, right, I'm going to have a right go today. You know, he might have had a bad sleep. He might have personal problems at home. You don't know. But if you don't try, you're never going to find out the answer.
But that's problem solving, isn't it? But do they problem solve now, or do they fucking look at a video on the side and say, someone tell me what to do? Did he take responsibility, or did he go, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just doing exactly what the manager says. And if there's a problem, it's up to him to sort it out. Because he'll just go in at half time and go, that's what you told me to do.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably been Everton's issue under so many managers, that players have been stopping to play how they want to play and thought, right, it's not working. He's not setting up the team to benefit me. So I'm just going to do exactly what he says and, you know, and not taking any pride in their own performance. And if they do sort of step out of line, they're probably getting told by the manager. So it works both ways. The manager's got to let the players go out and express themselves, but also have a basic understanding of, do your job first.
And solve your own problems, because that's what good... They look at somebody who they're playing against, go, right, am I faster than him? Am I slower? Is he not aggressive? What's he like? Does he hold the ball up? Will he take me short to go long? Will he go long to go short? What's he doing? And I'll solve my problems, and then I'll test him out. And you impose on them.
You do. And players always want to get treated like men. They, they feel like they're grown men. They're still only young men, but they feel like they're men. When you're in that environment, you feel like you're a lot older than what you are, and you want that respect from the manager and from the club. But then when they're on the pitch, they seem to shrink. When situations go wrong, you find out who's the leaders and who takes responsibility and who's not afraid to ask. If I'm struggling as a left back, you know, I'll be saying to my centre half, look, come over a bit tighter to me. You know, I'm going to show them like inside a bit more because I'm struggling. You know, I'm problem solved, as you said yourself, and that's all about communication and understanding you need help and asking for help and or helping your teammates if he's struggling. You don't seem to see that very, very rarely. You see that in modern day football. You just see that it's the same incidents happening time and time again. And if he's like, if he's the fullback's getting taken on time and time again, they're just like, I'll take him off. He's having a bad day and bring another one on. There's no sort of team bonding of like, let's get over and help him here. He's against, you know, Mo Salah, you know, causing us problems. We need to do something different as a team. Everyone's thinking, looking after themselves, I feel.
I just used to go out and go, I'll tell you what, I'll just do my job. I can't control the rest of what happens. So if I do my job, you do your job at left back, he does his job at right back, we're going to be all right. All right, you can help.
That's normally said at the start, isn't it, Nev? Before every game. Come on, lads, win your battles. If you win 9 or 10 of the battles, we're going to win the game. That's a basic one that everyone knows the job from the start.
Yeah, just so I never used to try and listen to the manager too much. I never used to try and listen to anybody too much, to be fair, because I just thought, well, I know what I'm doing. This is what I want to do. I know what I'm doing. I'm prepared properly. I just want to go out now and see what happens. And I'll try and think my way through the game. And I think sometimes I look at, especially modern goalies, they don't think their way through the games. They just react to shit. And I'm thinking, if you can, you know, think your way through the game, like a chess match, you're far better off than just reacting. And then I look at Jordan at the times, I'm thinking, you're a reactor. And there's very few now thinkers. And I'm thinking, you know, I like thinking players because they solve problems and they can work things out and they can, you know, get people to do what they want them to do. And as a player, you want the other opposition to do exactly what you want them to do. But we seem to go, oh, shit, he's got the ball. What should we do now? And that's why you have no composure.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Michael, I've got a question. Is there still, I mean, look, you talk about characters in football. I know that there's a big character in football on this call with us right now. But is there still room for characters and personalities in the modern game? I mean, and who are the ones that you've met during the course of your career? Have you got any good stories about them? Any good anecdotes?
Yeah, no, I think it all got driven out with the media. But I think if you've got characters now, you know, I look and say Jack Grealish, you know, wins the league, wants to go and do what he wants to do. He's on social media. He's just being a normal young boy. And he's getting lambasted by media to stop all that because it's off the norm. So it stops other people thinking, I don't want to be put across in a bad light. No player likes bad press. Of course you don't. But some players, the play within themselves, and it's like they're not robots, but they get treated like robots nowadays. So it's hard for them to express themselves. And you might get the odd one or two, but it has been driven out of the game. And it's refreshing when you see a young lad, Jack Grealish, he's just won every trophy he's ever dreamed about. And he wants to have a beer. He wants to throw champagne while he's with the team on a bus. Let him do what he wants. And that's his moment to relax and celebrate the success he's had. And for the media to be at them, it stops others from doing that. You know, you've got agents probably stopping them from doing certain things to express themselves. You've probably got agents forcing players to do sponsorship things that they don't really want to do. They're too shy. They don't want to be in the spotlight. Obviously every individual's different. But yeah, it does seem that big characters from the game is gone. I think Haaland seems to be a character from what I'm hearing. I think everybody loves what he's all about, but I think he can afford to do basically what he wants anyway. No one's going to tell him what to do. And obviously his record speaks itself because he's earned the right because he's done the work. You know, he's done the work on the pitch. He's scoring the goals, breaking records. So yeah, he can do what he wants. And that's what like Zlatan used to be like. You know, he scored in goals. If anyone give him some crap, he'd just go, look at my record. Ronaldo is the same. So as long as you're doing the job on the pitch, you know, let the players dictate it. That's what they want to do out of football and express themselves. They've got the social media all over the place now to sort of reply back to the media now. You know, back in our day, if you got bad press, you just have to suck it up and go like fish and chip paper. Hopefully, you know, people forget about that next week. They'll pick on someone else next week. But now you've got the tools of social media to back up your own story and tell the media where to go if you wanted to. But I think a lot of people, a lot of sponsorships are involved now. They're all a bit touchy and a bit edgy to sort of be themselves, which I find quite sad, to be honest. And it's footballers are just all the same. The anecdote are probably when PSV, we won the league very early on. And if you don't know, in Holland, if you win the league, I think we won the league in like April, we were that far ahead. So the second, third and fourth place teams, they've done a playoff then for the second Champions League spot, second, third, fourth and fifth team. So we'll play like a round robin to get the second place in the Champions League. And we had a bit of a holiday. So we came home for the time being. And then Hiddink said, right, we're going to mini pre-season for a week before the cup final. We went to Parma. So we were just all, the lads, play golf. I'm not a golfer. We're just training, chilling out in the sun and relaxing and doing hard sessions in the afternoon. And it was all good. But then we were allowed to express ourselves and go out for the evening. I wasn't expecting the type of night out with the stars of, say, Patrick Clive, Philip Cocu and Andre Oya, Alex and Gomez, the goalkeeper. But I thought the English were bad. These were nuts. You know, the Brazilians know how to party. The Dutch know how to have a drink and a party. And I wasn't expecting it. And we're walking around and I seen a sign to Magaluf. And I said to the lads, oh, Magaluf, let's go here. So they all jumped in the taxi, got to Magaluf. And I'm sort of watching, stepping back, watching like the young girls and young lads giving out leaflets to Philip Cocu and Clive here to go, yeah, walk in this bar, you got a free shot. And they didn't have a clue who they were. Obviously, they're that young, they don't understand how much of the legends these were. But the lads just embraced it, loved it. We stayed for like half an hour. And I think they'd just seen too many women drinking pints and thought, like, we need to get out of here. And then they took us to like a Dutch part of the island in Parma. But basically, they had their own version of Magaluf. And it was just an experience to see them out of their shell. Philip Cocu was our captain, very quiet, didn't really say much to anybody. Football just did all the talking. Obviously, his record of captain of Barcelona for years was up. He gained that respect just being up. But when he spoke, and everyone just sort of listened to him, and it was very short and sweet. But his captaincy was just on the pitch, and everyone was just all in awe of the age he was, how he looked after himself, what he did in training. And then to see him sort of express himself, having a drink, having a glass of wine, you know, before the cup final, it was just sort of great to see that the normal, you know, because you only get to see normally when you're a football team, one or two, you might get close to, but to be together as a team and see them let their hair down and relax as what you'd expect normal human beings to do was sort of like, yeah, it was just come back down to earth a little bit. And the Dutch model, I thought was good for the youngsters. If we go back to that, was a lot of the Dutch, yes, they want to sell them to Spain, Germany, England, Italy to make money, to refund the next generation. And that's what they do. And any transfers that they do sell, it filters back down to the whole ecosystem in Holland. If Aaron Robben started at like a boys club and he rose to Chelsea, that boys club gets a percentage. So their facilities can be upgraded. They get looked after. The pitches are in good condition and the facility in that community. And I just don't understand. Well, the Premier League have said they were going to do it in England and it's never been done for full tuition for one reason or another, but that just seems very simple. A local lad does well. The local boys club be brought to give them the opportunity. They get a bit of a cut of the money that the football club makes, and it makes the whole sort of ecosystem a lot easier, not friendly.
Is that one of the reasons why the facilities are so good over there? That like there is that trickle down?
Yeah, I know it's obviously not as many people over there, so the community look after the community. So each sort of small village has their own sort of setup, and the locals look after it. And not getting paid to do it, but they're proud of that. They're proud of, you know, XY come from this pitch. You know, Ruud Gullit come from here, or Jaap Stam started it here. And, you know, yes, the model in Holland is to get them out the door, is to give them that opportunity young, to get them. My first game to watch at PSV when I signed was a Champions League game against AC Milan. I was sitting next to my dad and we were going through the team. I didn't know that. I knew probably half of the team. Van Bommel just moved to Barcelona. And we had two 16-year-olds making the debut against AC Milan. I'm thinking, what other club would do this? And it was these two boys debut against AC Milan in the Champions League qualifier. And you know, they held their own. I think one of them got man of the match, and you know, he went on to have a great career, move to Barcelona. But it's the opportunity they get given. It's a pathway. So if you're a youngster in Holland, going back to say, why would you sign for Everton? Why would they sign for PSV? Ajax are all the same. They're roughly the same. But you're getting a pathway. You're getting an opportunity because they want to cash you in. the end of the day. They want to give you the experience on the pitch. If obviously you've got to have the ability, of course, but you're going to get given the opportunity to do so. And it's up to you if you can sink or swim. And, you know, I always spoke to the hierarchy at PSV because they used to have small pictures of Romario and Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo and Ruud Gullit, all these world-class world stars. I'm thinking, wow, how many? You know, there's a lot of players I never thought went through the PSV system. Now, how do you do that? But then you did explain you don't get to hear about the failures. There's obviously a lot of failures to get that. Of course, you don't get to hear about that. They obviously celebrate the ones that have come through the system, but obviously there's a lot of players that haven't made it. You know, we bought a player called Robert, well, his name was Robert, from Brazil. And he was getting opportunities time and time again, but he was struggling to make the grade, but he was still getting opportunities. And, that's when I had this discussion of why is he getting opportunity? Because Brazil started playing their home games in Europe, and PSV wanted him to be part of the Brazil so they could sell him. If he didn't play him at PSV, they obviously wouldn't get the transfer fee. And they've got tax implications in Holland for the foreigners. You know, they could get visas pretty quickly if you pay them over a certain amount of money per year. So they can take a gamble of taking youngsters from South America. And if they do well, yeah, it works out brilliantly for them. They sell them for 20-odd million pounds each. But obviously, there's a lot of them that don't work out. Which you don't get to hear about, which obviously they hide.
That's brilliant. But thanks for sharing that. That's really, really interesting stuff. I mean, Nev, we're coming up on our 90 minutes now. I mean, have you got any other sort of things you want to discuss, Nev? Any big questions you want to?
No, I think that's quite a nice way to finish it. I think what it boils down to is that they trust you and they give you opportunity to be yourself. And I think that's important for any young footballer, that somebody will trust you, first and foremost. And then if you're not yourself, then you're never going to achieve, I don't think. And I think in this country, we try and make people into something that they're not. You know, if you take Jack Grealish and people like that, to be successful, you have to be yourself because you can't be anybody else. And every time you're not yourself, then you can't succeed, can you? So for me, football's about getting somebody and trusting them and letting them be them. And if you can let them be them, they'll be the best version of them.
Yeah, that was another thing in Holland. When I was coming back from an injury, I was training with the reserves or the youth squad. Mm. And it was an ex-PSV player was their manager. The assistant manager was an ex-player. And when you're playing and training with them, they stop and then ask one of the youngsters to problem solve what's going wrong. And he does the team talk. So he has the ability. Yes, look, the Dutch, you know, they do love the talk. You know, they do have an opinion of themselves, but that's their upbringing. That's just the way they are. But it was an opportunity for him to state what he thinks is going wrong to his team. In England, that would never happen. It was always from the coach. And it's like we're the robots. The coach stops the session, tells us what to do, and we go out and try and do it. In Holland, it was more of, yes, they have the same system, but then when it's if you get beat 5-a-side, 6-a-side, they'll go stop and talk, and you go number 6 talk. So then it'd be up to him to put a bit of a team talk or a discussion, and you're thinking that's brilliant, you know, for leadership, for your own accountability for yourself, and then everybody else to take accountability. And I thought that it's putting it on the toes a little bit, but it's getting them ready for the mad world of football in the future.
The only thing I'll have to say now is for me, Paul, it was always nice to see you get on and do well.
Oh, no, thanks very much. Well, remember me debut, Nev, and it didn't last too long because he obviously left the football club. When I made my debut, he took a goal kick. It went just over my head and then it was in half-time. I remember just having a discussion next year, but to share the field and training with you, the experiences was like obviously a dream come true to do that.
Thanks, mate, but it was nice to see, you know, somebody get on who was obviously a good player, you know, who could do something. And I thought, if I'm honest, I thought you were probably better suited to Holland than you were to England at times.
Yeah, because
the ability to go and do, you know, you were probably a modern player playing in a different area where it probably would be better for you. If you were playing now, you'd cruise it, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was that sort of style, isn't it? The football back then, you know, that's what, there was a lot of clubs back then. It was Holland, it was Italy. I was more of probably a foreign player with a British style. Yes, I used to like a tackle and stuff, but I used to like using my brain and my ability to get me out of situations.
Yeah, no, it was nice to see you get on, mate, I have to say. So when obviously the apprentices come through, you'd always look at them thinking, okay, have any of these got a chance? You can always say you had a chance, mate.
Yeah, no, brilliant. That means a lot coming from you, Nev. Thanks very much.
All right, no problem, mate. So, James, what do you want to do now, mate?
I think we're up on time, but that's been brilliant. I could happily go into stoppage time and extra time with this, but no. But it's
we're used to that nowadays, aren't we?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, there's been no VAR in this one.
My dad's missed about 90 minutes of football this season, leaving on 90 minutes to get to the car.
What a nightmare. Oh, I'll tell you what, that's another conversation. If we go down the VAR rabbit hole, we'll be on it till tomorrow morning. But Michael, listen, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been brilliant, brilliant. Everything you've shared with us, really enjoyed that. So thank you to Michael Ball. Thank you to the big man himself, Neville Southall, who's brought us all together. I'm James Rogers, and thank you for listening to 90 Minutes with Neville Southall. We'll see you at the next episode.